this one in the direction of Mike Sims Walker. This one's going to be batted and caught. Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? It was batted back into the arms of Mike Thomas, and the Jaguars have won it! Holy cow!
How did that happen?
That's unbelievable! Mike Sims Walker batted it back! Oh! Hail Mary!
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in everybody. It was kind of a Hail Mary, Tony. I didn't know if you'd let me back or not, so I threw it up. Fortunato batted it, tried to bat it down, but batted it right back into my arms, and here I am.
Hail Mary.
I've returned. Answering no one's prayers but my own. Did you miss me? That's a dumb question. How was the last bit of the dead period while I was gone?
Oh, it was fine. Look, there's always something to talk about with the Jags getting ready for training camp. I mean, even if it is the off season and All-Star Week and nobody's in training camp.
LeBron is... You had LeBron going back to Cleveland. You had Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, that was the day you left.
British Open. I know, all that stuff.
The there's day you some, left, LeBron signed.
There's a major... If I leave, there's a major story that's going on. We wouldn't have been breaking down LeBron going to Cleveland anyway.
No.
But last year when I went on vacation in the summer, it was Aaron Hernandez getting embroiled.
Yes, it was.
In all his his dealings, which he is currently still embroiled in. But I'm back. The Jags will be back shortly, and then it's on.
Just
from
3 days.
That point forward. 3 days. I mean, they'll be reporting in a couple of days, and saw Dave Caldwell walking by the studio this morning. We're going to have Gus Bradley sit down with us tomorrow on Jaguars Today. As he is anxious, he is so excited about my return. I'm guessing Gus Bradley had no idea I was gone. None whatsoever.
Well, I think Gus has been out, too, enjoying his vacation.
I would hope so. I would hope so. That's not to suggest that that regular listeners were not enthralled by the Fat Tony Show over the last week.
I hope so.
Today, along with some bonus co-hosts, thanks to Brent Martineau and T-Wig for stepping in while I was gone. I assume you had Mark Long and Osh and Ryan O'Halloran.
We did.
And the like. Happy belated birthday to yourself.
Thank you very much.
And the Ozone yesterday, and the best is yet to come. Lauren Brooks turns 24 later on this week.
Yes,
so.
She does.
Close.
Very nice for her. Hi, Lauren Brooks. How are you?
Hi, Mike. I'm good, thanks. How are you? Good morning, Starshine.
Good morning. That's how we used to roll. We used to do a little good morning Starshine thing right before we came on the air, but Lauren's trying to take that to the airwaves today. I may sing that later today. I'm not sure.
I like it. I like it.
As the birthday week continues, you can sing her a song every day.
I didn't do any singing at the family reunion over the past week. As far as I know, I did a little dance, and oh my goodness, I can't tell. My family wouldn't care if I told you the story, but I'm not sure I want to tell you the story of what my 82-year-old aunt did.
What?
At the family reunion. That, for members of the family that were, you know, that married into it and may have been there for the first time. Boy, what a shock, a culture shock it can be.
Now I feel like I have to know.
It was officially dubbed the Dempsey Family Reunion. There are only three Dempseys at it, though.
Okay.
Because my dad had the three brothers, and they're all Dempseys, but most of the boys didn't have many kids. He had four sisters, they had all the kids, so it's really one branch of the family reunion. It's not like the outside. So from my grandmother and grandfather and my dad's side had the eight kids, and so all the cousins and their surviving kids who are now my aunts, such as the one I mentioned, who's 82 years young, I believe, is the age. That's who showed up, Tony. Not a one of them, by the way. None of them, including some who spend at least part of the year living in Europe. None of them knew that the NFL plays at all in London, which surprised me a little bit. It didn't shock me. They're not like us. They're not, you know, consuming the National Football League 24 hours a day. In fact, to the point that one of my cousins, Danielle, said, I want to play fantasy football for the first time this year. Will you help me? I said, sure. You know, just hit me up on Facebook. So she left and hit me up yesterday when I was not prepared to get back into this whole social media world. And she goes, okay, I have a team. I picked the Jets. Now what do I do? And I'm like,
no.
What are you, no, but what are you talking? I don't even know what she's talking about.
You've made two mistakes. Because what kind of fantasy game are you playing and why would anyone pick the Jets?
I think she just has heard that it's fun and she's really a hockey fan more than anything. She's a big New York Rangers fan.
Okay.
I hope she's not listening.
She'd get along. Hi, Danielle. So I don't know if she's listening or not. She may be, but I was just surprised that nobody knew that the NFL plays in London at all.
You know?
So, you know, it just came up in conversation.
It tells you part of the impact that the NFL really is having over there. There's a misunderstanding, I think, about as big as the game is here, the NFL and football is here, we don't understand how irrelevant it really is in most of the world. I mean, they really don't care. And they're playing games over there in London. They fill it up every time that they go over there, and that's great. But for the people of Ireland to not know, doesn't surprise me all that much, considering, look, I told you guys right before we came back here that Tottenham is here. That's one of the premier league teams is here playing their summer series in a series of friendlies. They had one on Sunday. They'll have another one tomorrow night. You don't know because you don't follow soccer. And unless you're following that particular sport, you're not going to have any idea of those kind of things happening.
Yeah, but would you, as a soccer fan in Europe, know that Tottenham's coming to the United States? Would you know? You know, and it's not.
Yes.
And it's not. Are they playing? They're playing a summer series. Are these the so-called friendlies?
Yeah, these are friendlies because the Premier League season is about to heat up.
Put it this way: if Tottenham were playing Arsenal, right, and I feel safe to say that they're two Premier League teams.
They're both in the Premier League. Yes.
Covered, and they're playing a game, an actual Premier League game in Dallas this year. I would think that most soccer fans would know that.
Yes, they
Europe,
would,
right?
But that doesn't necessarily mean that most American football fans would know that soccer game was going on, which
is the discussion that we're having. No, the discussion is that we're sending our sport over there.
Right, and we
and
would...
playing a game that counts.
Right, and we would be...
Games.
We would be unaware... Most Americans would be unaware of the game that counts from there coming to here, is the point that I'm
right,
making.
But I'm saying most of my relatives are not from Europe, okay?
Right.
I'm saying some of them who may... I'm trying to cover both sides of the Atlantic.
Sure.
Most of them are American with Irish roots that are sports fans to one degree or another. Some of them...
And didn't know we're playing in London?
And didn't know we play that the NFL plays any games in London. That's kind of my point. And the ones who are in Europe didn't know that we were sending our sport over there. And I guess from your point that you're making there, we don't know... We don't follow whether Tottenham's playing Arsenal or whatever, although I do think a bigger deal would be made if games had actually counted. That's an exhibition game.
No, they probably would.
So anyway, I just found it interesting. Anyway, that nobody seemed to be all that, oh, really? That's interesting. Just like, why do they do that kind of thing? Money would be the answer to that.
That is the driving force behind everything.
Go look at the State of the Jaguars press conference that we carried on 1010XL earlier this year. And the economic impact that one game had on the Jaguars' bottom line in 2013. And hopefully we'll have another big positive one in 2014. Tony, I mean, they're here. It's almost here on the field on Friday. We'll be broadcasting from training camp practices a lot of the days, not every day. I know we'll be out there Friday, so come look for us as you walk in the main gates if you're coming out. I saw the Bills had 4,000 at their Sunday night practice. So, you know, you compare that to the Jags had 6,000 at the rookie minicamp earlier this summer.
Yep.
And then consistently 1,000 to 2,000 people on weekday mornings on the open practices. The Bill, obviously, a Sunday night. It's the first practice of training camp. You're going to get a good turnout. So, but the bottom line is, no matter what market you're in the NFL right now, you're excited about your team. You're accentuating
the
positive.
It's a talking season, yeah. We're still in the talking season. Until your team gets on the field and starts getting its brains beat out by their opponents, you still feel pretty good about all the moves that they made. And it's, look, this society is football starved. And it's exhibited again in the last couple of days by the fact that Buffalo goes to camp and all of a sudden we're seeing highlights from Sammy Watkins in shorts and a helmet catching a touchdown pass. It was trending worldwide on Twitter to go watch the play. Look, it's unreal how much people want football.
Well, in that case, the NFL, we know how big it is in the United States of America. Only one team had opened camp.
Yep.
He's the new addition, high profile, big trade up in the draft. You can understand why there's a focus now that every camp a week from now will be opened up.
Yep.
You won't have that to that degree on every single play being made around the National Football League, but it's certainly out there.
We'll get a few from Cleveland.
You think we might get a few with the number one jersey seller, Johnny Manziel. We'll get to that a little bit later on. Blake Bortles placing in the top 20 in overall jersey sales, which usually, does Forbes even usually list the top 25? I always recall they always give out the top 10. It's always hard to find information much beyond that on some of these stories, unless somebody like Darren Revelle is doing a more extensive profile.
I don't remember.
I don't know. I just don't recall. I'm sure I've seen it from time to time. It just seems like it gets talked about as the top 10 a lot more than the top 25. But Blake Bortles did crack the top 20 in overall NFL jersey sales, not just rookie jersey sales.
That's good.
So kind of interesting, creating, like we said, newness and hope springing eternal, creating that buzz around the National Football League. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asks you every day as Jaguar fans what drives you. Today, we're asking you which off-season move will have the biggest on-field impact in 2014. You can argue that Blake Bortles will have the biggest franchise impact long-term. I think it would be difficult to argue that he'll have the biggest on-field impact this season, but you're welcome to argue that point if you want to. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL. That account's been pretty silent for about 10 days. I got to tell you, Tony, I have found I can live quite easily without the whole social media thing. For the job, I feel it's a great conduit to connect with listeners, with
sure.
fans of the Jags, stuff like that. But I didn't find myself having the desire to do a whole lot of live tweeting of anything over the last 10 days.
No, I use my Twitter account basically for this. It's my connection to the fans I know out there that we want to talk sports. That's what I use it for. Whenever I'm off doing anything else, it's like, nah, I don't really, no, social media, I don't need it for that.
Tony's Twitter account, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Warren, tweet any of those. And also the Facebook page, which, again, I do that mostly for the show. And I got an alert on my phone. You know, I have my phone.
I was active enough
alerts.
On it.
You did. You sent out all the good stuff from the Jaguars Today Facebook account, facebook.com/Jaguars Today.
The first day, people were confused. They were like, is Mike there?
What's happening?
No.
No, it's tied to my Twitter. So
yeah.
any tweets that get sent through that were actually Fat Tony tweets. But my phone is sent to, alert me anytime anyone does anything these days. Tweet. Facebook, whatever, anytime you're mentioned, you know, your phone can buzz at you.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sitting around and it's like, I'm tagged in a comment that my sister is in the Atlanta airport. And I'm like, really? Why? I just don't understand why. Who cares that you're in the Atlanta airport? And I'm with you, and I don't care that you're in the Atlanta
airport.
They
desperately want someone to like that comment.
I guess.
Please like my comment.
Please like the fact that I'm in the Atlanta Hartsfield Airport. All right, today we'll get into Blake Bortles, the impact that he can make on this franchise, not only in 2014, but beyond. And we'll talk a lot about the off-season moves that may shape the direction this team takes in 2014. Welcome your calls at 641-1010. Haven't forgotten the phone number at this point, so that's a good sign. Just getting started, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios here live at Everbank Field. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Jaguars Today on this Tuesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, the dynamic duo, is back. Fortunato just gave me an evil glare. What happened to me? Cut him right out of the dynamic duo.
It should be the three amigos.
You had your 10. Lauren said it should be the three amigos. That would be you, Lauren. You'd be the third amigo.
Oh. But I would be amiga.
Fortunato, amiga. Whatever. don't ruin my momentum here. It's taken 10 days to come up with this storyline, and this is what I've got. 641-1010 if you want to jump in today. One of the things we will discuss at length is which single offseason move, and we've got a variety of them already submitted to us, which one offseason move will have the biggest impact on the Jags' on-field performance in 2014. I think, to me, there's a pretty obvious one, but we'll let it play out and see what you think about that. Tony and I will discuss our thoughts on it a little bit later on. Also, we continue a look at the AFC West. Tony, not that I wasn't listening intently. It just slipped my mind. What division did you do last week?
We did the AFC East.
AFC East
last
week.
That's why you left. You didn't want to talk Jets football.
I felt conflicted. I got a new one of my cousins, by the way, got Colin a couple of gifts. Not knowing who he rooted for, she assumed it must be one of the New York teams because of where my roots are.
Right.
So she got him a Giants and Jets snow globe, each, just a one for each team.
Yeah, that's cool.
I was going to give you the Giants one, and I took a look at it. The water had already leaked out of the Giants snow globe.
Is that a sign for the upcoming season?
It may be, Lauren, that the Giants are going to be leaking oil early up there. Chris Snee announces his retirement, crippling the offensive line. By the way, did you see some of the numbers that Peter King put in his Monday Morning Quarterback column in the QB comparison yesterday among the quarterbacks who currently are playing that have won Super Bowls?
Mm-hmm.
Eli, look, he's won two Super Bowls, you know,
yes, he has.
And he, at the end of his career, if he wins another one, he'll probably be a Hall of Famer, all right? And you look at his numbers, and it's kind of like a Bradshaw story, right? I mean, the team was good. Eli played well in those postseasons, and he'll never, you know, people are always talking about no one can ever take it away. I don't know who's trying to take anything away from anybody, really, to this extent when it comes to sports accomplishments, but we always say that. But his numbers are so bad in comparison to those other guys. Flacco, slightly better, but in that aspect of, yes, somewhat you get some elite status bestowed upon you when you have that postseason success. The truly great ones can match both. You know, Aaron Rodgers at the top of the charts in almost every category. And the fascinating thing was where Russell Wilson fit in so highly.
Well, he's 52 and 19.
Right. But, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, in yards per attempt.
Touchdown to picks.
You know, the stats that 52 and 19 touchdown to interception ratio. So his TD percentage very high, his quarterback rating very high, his yards per attempt extremely high, which you have this impression that everything's conservative in Seattle, that they're trying to really kind of nurse him along the first couple years of his career.
I thought that was the case the first half of his rookie year. Last year, they threw it down the field a lot in Seattle.
And with Percy Harvin coming in, you would expect, trading Golden Tate for Percy Harvin, to me at least, I expect that number to grow with success.
I would think so, too.
And you wonder how much of that is, too. They still did run the ball a lot. And when you've got that and you've got a defense that you know is going to keep you in every football game and teams know that you're predominantly a run-first mentality, it's easier to take some of those play-action shots, extend the field. So he's probably gotten some big chunk plays.
Sure, especially with the guy as mobile as Russell. If Marshawn is working that week, you know, you run that play-action and bootleg him out the other side, and he's been so effective at being able to do that early on in his career that, yeah, Seattle's been able to take those shots downfield when they want to.
All right, let's get into it. If you want to get on board, 641-1010, which one offseason move will have the biggest positive impact on the Jags' on-field success?
There's a bunch to choose from.
There really are a lot to choose from. We'll run through some of the candidates. Let's go to the phones for the first time since I'm back. So the first time in a good long time for me. 641-1010, let's talk to Brandon. Hey, Brandon, how are you?
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
What's up?
I'm kind of like an old school minded guy when it comes to football. I think it's win, won, and loss in the trenches. So I'm going to say Zane Beals, and you combine him with Brewster, who a lot of people don't know was actually a really good player at Ohio State, and we're getting Jokel back and the whole offensive line. Listen, if you can't protect the quarterback, you can't do anything. And on the flip side, the longer you protect the quarterback, there's only so long the defensive backs can run around back there. So, and, you know, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, probably some of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game. Both of them, the kryptonite is pressure. Doesn't matter who you put back there. If you can't protect them, you can't play football. I think it comes up here.
All right. Well, my first comment would be, if you're looking at a position group, okay, but if you're looking at one individual move, I'm not going to lump Beatles, Brewster, Jokel returning from injury. I mean, you could look at any one of those, Tony. That's kind of what the focus is for me today. The way I looked at this when I was thinking about offensive linemen, Beatles seems to be the guy because you've added him to the roster and he's an established player around the league that is going to make a big impact. You hope Jokel does. It's kind of an unknown, but it's not really a move. I guess you could consider a move returning from injury, rehabbing, all those things. If you want to look at it that way, that's fine. But I thought, boy, if Beatles goes down, can you find a guy to play guard and get you through? And I know they've struggled at times in recent years to find quality play on the offensive line, so it's not like he's easily replaceable. I just do think that's a position that you could find a guy midstream easier than you could at some other spots.
Probably could find a guy that could play guard for you a little bit easier because it's guard. But this is a Jaguar team that hasn't been able to protect the quarterback at all in the last couple of years, and by bringing in a guy like Beatles, they feel like they've shored up not only that left guard spot, but the left side of the line of scrimmage with Luke Jokel coming back. He doesn't top my list of the guys that I think were the most important move, the most critical move for them going into 2014, the most impactful, but he certainly is one of the guys that belongs in the conversation, because if it does shore up the entire left side of that line of scrimmage for the Jags, that's huge. For a team that hadn't been able to protect the passer at all in a handful of years, if they do feel like they have their left tackle and left guard for the next 4 to 5 years locked up, that's a huge position for them to be in.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with
you. Not to say it's not replaceable. It's a guard.
Look, they're all important. And somebody just tweeted this a minute ago. This is from Sean Moore on Twitter. He said, all of them because it's one team, not an individual, that will lead to success. Blah, 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 blah. I'm serious. Come on. I mean, look, that's great. Every move's important, but not every move's equally important. That's just the bottom line, you know? Is every move in Denver a couple of years ago as important as picking up Peyton Manning?
Nope.
Obviously not. I mean, there's certain moves that are going to be more important than others, and I get it. It's a team game, but it's a team game in which individuals make a big impact. And, you know, that you talk about the stuff that's in the news yesterday. Tony Dungy commenting on Michael Sam, how he wouldn't take him because, among other things in his quote, things will happen. Mm-hmm. Other distractions, right?
Sure.
Well, that's fine. But if Michael Sam were considered to have Jadeveon Clowney's talent, it wouldn't be that big a deal. He'd get a lot more consideration from a lot of people around the National Football League because talent trumps all. That's a move that the St. Louis Rams made. It's not as important as some of the other moves that they made in terms of indicating what their on-field success is going to be in 2014. You want to weigh in on that? 641-1010. You're welcome to do that. Mentioned Blake Bortles in the top 20 in jersey sales. Number 18. And I heard Dan and Jeff talk about this a little bit this morning. I can't recall. I would assume at some point that Maurice Jones-Drew may have cracked the top 25. May have done it more than once. May have been more frequent than I realized. He's the likely guy over the last several years. But I can't. It's been a while, I would imagine, since the Jags have had a guy in the top 20. Certainly for Maurice, at least going back to the year where he led the league in rushing. The last couple of years, there weren't really any reasons to rush out and buy any Jaguar jerseys unless you were a Jag fan. And I do think the Manziel being number one, I don't think it's just because Cleveland Brown fans are glomming up his jerseys. I think there is a certain segment of people that are going to just think that Manziel is cool, and they like the way he plays, and there are going to be a lot of people that buy Manziel jerseys that aren't Browns fans. I don't think that's going to be the case too much with a guy like Blake Bortles.
No, probably not.
But still, though.
Manziel's bigger than that. I mean, he's a rock star.
Wherever he had been in Jacksonville, I would have expected similar results, I would think, wherever he went with his jersey sales.
Me too.
But to me, the fact that Bortles is not that guy in terms of just the buzz, certainly the newness this franchise is looking for. If you're looking for whose jersey are you going to buy to hang your hat on, you know, who am I going to put Blackman on the shelf for, right? That was the last probably really big seller, I would think, for the Jags.
Well, they gave you options. That's what we're talking about a little bit today with the fan feedback question, too, is they gave you options. Blake is obviously the big one, but They drafted a couple of receivers in the second round.
Toby Gerhardt.
They signed a running back in free agency. I mean, there's options now for Jags fans, even in the jersey department, where
and,
they haven't been.
You know, Gerhardt, by the way, the buzz is starting to build on him. We've talked about in fantasy circles. It's funny watching the national buzz catch up with the Jaguar storylines. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the same way everywhere. You know, maybe nationally we catch up with stuff that people have been talking about locally in San Diego or,
and they scoff.
Or wherever. And they do, and they say, come on, we knew that. But, you know, you see the item, I guess it was in Gus Bradley's interview that he did with Ryan O'Halloran. By the way, Gus on the program tomorrow on Jaguars Today. So tune in for that. Sometime probably in the 10 o'clock hour, we're expecting.
Yeah.
Probably pretty early in the show. But where he made a comment about Jordan Todman being more of a change of pace back and... you know, that he looks at Denard, I think it was Gus saying that, that he looks at Denard and Todd Moore's change of pace backs, and everyone said, ooh, take note of this. This is, well, I don't know what they
really... What else
really,
would their role be?
Right. And I guess maybe it indicates some thinking that if Toby Gerhardt were to miss an extended period of time, knock on wood, that Storm Johnson might be a guy who's more equipped you know, with his body size to be more of an early first and second down guy, mm-hmm. at least, and get more of the volume of work as far as that goes. 641-1010 if you want to get in today. Jags opening up training camp later on this week. We'll be out on the practice field. Tony and I will be this Friday broadcasting from 10 to noon and doing that quite frequently, at least through the first couple weeks of training camp. Let's go back to the phone lines. Darren, you're up next here on Jaguars Today. How you doing?
Hey, welcome back, Dent.
Thanks, man.
I just was want to chime in on the question you asked. I guess the most significant offseason move the Jaguars made. I think if I had to go with probably the most obvious pick, in my opinion, probably be Chris Clemens. Getting somebody to sack the pass or sack the quarterback. But the most potential pick, I would have to say, my more favorite pick is actually who you were just talking about, Toby Gerhardt. And I know each pick has the potential to be great, but I more so would go with Gerhardt because, you know, like you said, Gus made it pretty clear that these guys were going to want to run the ball. You know, we want to use Gerhardt in the type of Marshawn Lynch type of situation. So if Gerhardt comes in and he's that, you know, pretty much every down type of back and can come in and actually get the Jaguars offense moving, it'll open up the doors for these young rookie receivers. So I think, you know, pretty much to get the offense going, Gerhardt will probably be my choice as it relates to the best significant move the Jags made, and I'm going to take it off the air with that.
All right, thank you, Darren. I agree that Toby Gerhardt has a chance to have, obviously, a huge role with this team if
yeah.
he stays healthy, and everything you hear coming out of the Jaguars brass mouths is very positive in that regard. What do you think about Chris Clemens? Do we have to expect a double-digit sack season for Chris Clemens? I don't know if to live up to the hype is the right way, but I think for Jaguar fans, they're looking for that pass rush savior to come in here and be that at least 10-12 sack guy. And they feel like because Chris Clemens has a track record before he got hurt of doing that, that that's what he's going to be for them.
No, you know, I think we've talked about this before, and the idea is for the team to get better getting after the passer. As a unit. Red Bryant they brought in to be a run stuffer, and hopefully he can continue in that role. I think bringing in a guy like Chris Clemens helps Sindarik Marks, and they probably help each other because Sindarik was so good at pressure in the pocket last season when he was on the field that having somebody playing that Leo position that is an accomplished pass rusher in this league and is really good right now. At this point in his career, and Chris Clemens probably helps both of those guys out. I don't know that there's a number I need to see from any of them. I think that the Leo position for this Jaguar team needs to combine for somewhere around 20 to 24 sacks would be what I'd say, and that would be Clemens and Branch and those guys that are going to play in that spot. They need to be able to get after the passer, and then they'll find the other, you know, 10, 15 sacks they need from the other positions along that line or blitzing linebackers, that kind of thing. But I think the position needs to improve, you know, by a time and a half over what it was last year, and I think it will with those guys being there.
Yeah, and we talked about, too, I mean, you know, 40 sacks is about a 10-sack improvement, roughly, from last year. But it's not just those 10 plays. It's the other, how many times are you getting pressure and you're causing the quarterback to throw a half second or a second earlier than he otherwise would, you don't get the stat for that, but maybe it results on a better result on the back end, either a pass breakup or an interception. 641-1010, you want to get on board talking about that today? We'll have more on Blake Bortles. He'll be back with his teammates coming up later this week, as he's also gotten some love from the folks who put out the Madden 2015?
Yeah.
Is that where we're at right now with that, with Madden 2015? He fared pretty well in the ratings, in the initial.
Yes, he did.
Release that's coming out now, so we'll get into that a little bit as well. 641-1010, which Jaguar, or which addition, which move, in the offseason will have the biggest impact on this team? Let's look at it that way. Which move? It could be a subtraction, as some people have suggested. A certain guy being shipped out as the Band-Aid gets ripped off and the new era gets started here at the quarterback position. Whichever way you want to go with that, you can tweet us as well at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
The Jaguars have a new radio home.
This is our house.
Yes, sir.
Our house. Let's get it rock and rolling.
Our house. Home of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Why shouldn't it be the Jaguars?
1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's been 1 week since you looked at me.
All right, we had One Way or Another by Blondie. Clearly, there's one in the theme. What are we talking about? One what? One. It's not one day till training camp starts.
The number one move?
That's close, but no.
That would have been a good one. Close, but no. I don't know what that means. I don't know how close. One, there's something with one in the theme, the musical theme today. I'm slow, Tony. It took me a couple segments to remember there was a musical theme.
I was wondering about that.
On this program, and then Lauren made sure to remind me, hey, buddy, don't forget what's going on. By the way, the Chargers apparently had a rec league softball team. Is that allowable? I mean, can you do that under your NFL contract? If you tear a knee round in second, I mean, it's one thing to go hit in the home run derby. There's very little risk, I think, that you're going to hurt yourself too badly.
Oblique.
Right?
You're risking the oblique.
No question you could strain an oblique. But I would think, you know, rec league softball, some of these guys, I doubt they're playing in the beer league. You know what I mean? They're probably in the A flight, whatever. I believe that's what it's somewhat referred to. Fortunately, I was giving me the nod.
They're pretty athletic.
They came in number two, though. They weren't even the best softball team in the league. They didn't win.
Take that.
They didn't win the league.
That's awesome.
Phillip Rivers played shortstop. Does he really have long hair? I'm looking at a picture of him right now.
Oh, he's grown it out. So we're gonna get the long hair and the bolo
tie.
I'm
talking mullet city, brother. He's got a hat on, but that's got to be a mullet that he's rocking. He's got no sideburns sticking out from under the hat. I'm just wondering if that's fake hair, if he's trying to go for a laugh or what the deal is. But they came in number two in their softball league. I don't know, man. I had a guaranteed contract like that that prohibited me from doing all these things. I just think I would take it easy with the beat up.
Yeah, probably.
I believe it is a mullet wig.
Is it a mullet wig?
That's what I'm reading.
Are you looking at? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't get into. I got sent the.
Well, we can clear it up with Michael Gelkin a little bit later on.
That's right. That's we're leading off with this. Who the hell plays for that number one softball team out in San Diego? Gelkin. Gelkin is the beat writer for the San Diego Union Tribune for the San Diego Chargers, and he'll join us in about 40 minutes as we look through the AFC West last week. You did Kansas City yesterday?
Yes.
How are they recuperating from that's one of the worst playoff collapses in the history of the National Football League. What was it, 38-10?
Yeah, it was a 28-point lead.
28-point lead, and Andrew Luck went all Andrew Luck, I guess, on them in the second half of that game.
Yes, he did. Look, I don't know how well Kansas City is recovering because I don't know how good that team really was. I mean, they were great getting after the passer, but you take a look at that roster, and we talked to Kansas City about that yesterday. Look, it's bad.
Doug Stewart.
Yeah, Doug Stewart. It's bad. It's bad. When you look at that roster, it's like, okay, you got Jamal Charles and what on offense? Dwayne Bowe?
There's not much in terms to scare you in terms of offensive playmakers.
And defensively, they can still get after you. But it's can the defense be what it was last year again? They affected so many games on that side of the ball. It's just one of those teams you feel like there's always that big group of teams that are around a 500 team, and every now and then things go right for you. You wind up 10-6, 11-5. That felt like Kansas City last year, and I would be more inclined to think they're going to win 6 or 7 games this year than break 500. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't know. I mean, it depends. I think so much of it depends on how good the Chargers and the Raiders are going to be this year.
Well, they're playing the NFC West.
That's tough.
I mean, you could realistically go 0-4 if you're Kansas City against the NFC West. And, yeah, it depends on how good San Diego and Oakland and those teams are going to be. But if you slip up once against Oakland, now you're talking about what could be a miserable season.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be really bad because they got swept by Denver last year anyway. They probably will again this season. You'd figure they maybe split with San Diego. If they're splitting with Oakland, I mean, where are they finding wins?
No, that's true. But we could have said that last year about them coming off a 2-win season. And that defense carried them. Defense and special teams were scoring points. I mean, they were scoring touchdowns for them. They were creating offense for them.
See,
with the defense.
Those kind of things don't
It generally reverts to the mean.
Yeah.
You know, you had that with the New Orleans Saints won the Super Bowl. Their defense was a big-time playmaking defense. And really, year in, year out, hasn't lived up to that.
No.
But, you know, when you combine that with the dynamic offense that they had, it was good enough to win the Super Bowl. Kansas City certainly had enough offense, though, Tony, to put up 38 points.
They did.
In that game. It was just a collapse, and who knows what the rest of the playoffs would have held for them going beyond that point. Taking a look at the Madden 15 rookie rating, saw a story today where Blake Bortles came out on top.
You're winners, Jacksonville.
Yes, you are. You drafted the right guy. They really are so they're like draft analysts, right?
It's funny reading about the little Q&A they had on CBS Sports is quite amusing to me. I mean,
Donnie Moore's the guy who comes up with the ratings.
Yeah.
He's the guy who officially assigns the ratings.
Because it really did read like this is a draft pick grade for this player, essentially.
Right, and he'd say, well, I like this guy better than this guy, and it was correct that he was the first player in his position to come off the board because we think he's, you know, quick in his back pedal and all this. It's like,
yeah.
How much film is this guy watching? I don't know. But the thing that they gave Blake Bortles the big edge at was throwing power, which he got a 92 rating in throwing power. He's got a strong arm in terms of throwing. Aesthetics right now on those passes.
Not so much.
Had that been a factor, he probably would not have come out ahead of Johnny Manziel and Teddy Bridgewater, which, by the way, Cleveland's now saying by week 3 of the preseason, they want to have a starter declared there. Mm-hmm. Manziel, the obvious answer to who Bortles will be most compared to in this draft class. I mean, clearly, quarterback versus quarterback, you're going to compare that. But I think Sammy Watkins is an interesting guy as well because a lot of Jag fans expected the pick to be Sammy Watkins, and he's already generating some buzz in Buffalo.
When you go back to that Thursday night draft night and the expectations of the fans, I think there were more people that were expecting it to be Sammy Watkins. But for the people that thought, all right, if we're going to go get a quarterback, it's going to be Johnny Manziel. That was the expectation, was for it to be Johnny Manziel if they were going to go quarterback there at number 3. And look, there were a bunch of stunned Jaguar fans that didn't know how to react to Blake Bortles being the pick. And I think because of that, he'll be compared more with Johnny Manziel and whether or not he's going to be a success in this league than he will Sammy Watkins. Because if they didn't choose another receiver over Watkins, they chose another quarterback over Manziel.
Right.
Essentially, is I think the way
but
the fan base
opted.
Will look
they
at
opted
it.
To go for the Bortles receiver combination, whichever they could get, because they couldn't know at that time who they could get. They had a feeling, you know, if Marquise Lee was gone, probably would have taken Allen Robinson with that second round pick, and then maybe not traded up and gone a different direction with one of those mid round picks that turned into Allen Robinson. But there's definitely some buzz about them taking Sammy Watkins. Not as much about them taking Teddy Bridgewater. Does Teddy Bridgewater's success weigh more or less heavily on Blake Bortles' comparisons than Sammy Watkins does?
I think the three of them, if any of those those three become successful, that's what the other two are going to be compared to because they were the first round quarterbacks in this draft class. So if one of them becomes successful, then the teams that didn't draft him, if they had the opportunity to, are going to be looked at and said, why didn't you draft this guy instead of that guy? And if it is Bridgewater because he went 32nd with Minnesota moving back into the first round, then yeah, there are going to be people that point to Jacksonville and Cleveland and say, why wasn't this the guy that you wanted? He was number one on a lot of draft boards going into the process a year ago. Apparently everyone got it wrong when we put him through the washer. I mean, all those things will start coming up. And I think because the quarterback position is so important in this league that quarterbacks get compared to quarterbacks. Quarterbacks don't get compared to wide receivers. That's not the way the league generally works. So if one of those three guys becomes successful, then the other teams will be looking at it saying, well, why didn't you take this guy?
But you look at a situation.
And by the way, if Blake Bortles becomes successful, then there'll probably be people in Houston going, why did you take Jadeveon Clowney over Bortles?
Right.
Because it's the quarterback.
Right. And the same thing to, I think, a large degree with Manziel in Houston, because those were the two guys. Bortles was a guy that was being pushed by John McClain of the Chronicle, who's probably, you know, the number one voice in terms of covering the Houston Texans, at least the most respected voice covering the Houston Texans. And then Manziel just obviously had the state of Texas connection with him as well. But you go back to Leftwich, Tony, and for years it was, we could have had Terrell Suggs. And so he did get that comparison with a player at a different position, in part because the next year you had so many quarterbacks that were available, and you would have had, you know, with the luxury of hindsight, you could have had the Terrell Suggs, Ben Roethlisberger combination.
Sure.
Which, by the way...
And you're talking about a guy there that's playing at an MVP level at times in his career on defense. And it's the same thing with Blaine Gabbert and J.J. Watt.
Right, but if Sammy Watkins, I mean, he, the Bills claim he was their number one player on their board ahead of Clowney. Whether that's true or not, who knows? And I think Pro Football Talk brought up an interesting point. I was reading PFT while I was gone, saying that, you know, if new ownership comes in, they could clean house, coach, GM. It's a lot easier to quote-unquote mortgage the future by trading that first-round pick next year and going all in on Sammy Watkins if you're in that position. And I think that's a pretty interesting way to look at it when we go into the build-up to the draft, to look at which guys have that kind of job security, and the ones that don't have as much, are they much more likely to stick their neck out and take a swing for the fences? You would expect them that they would be.
Probably.
As far as that goes. But, you know, like I said, Leftwich got compared to Suggs. Ben Roethlisberger, let me take a look. I mentioned these QB ratings that Peter King looked at in his Monday Morning Quarterback column. He did some research on all the quarterbacks who have won Super Bowls, the active quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers tops the list, has the best quarterback rating, the best completion percentage of all those, or actually second best to Drew Brees by a minuscule margin, best yards per attempt, highest percentage of his passes that result in touchdowns, lowest interception percentage as well. So across the board, he's number one or just right behind number one in every category. Russell Wilson is right there with him when you factor everything in, including yards per attempt, which is a biggie in the National Football League. Russell Wilson at 8.1, second. Aaron Rodgers at 8.2.
Wow.
And that's a guy who takes a lot of shots down the field. You compare that to a guy like Flacco, who's at 6.9. Eli's at 7.1. Their interception percentage is significantly higher in the case of a guy like Eli Manning's, almost twice as many as Aaron Rodgers. Completion percentage for Flacco and Manning at 60 and 58.5, respectively, when kind of the gold standard is right there around 65% for Rodgers and Manning. But Roethlisberger fares decently well. Quarterback rating for his career in the 90s. Which compares, you know, pretty favorably to Tom Brady and Drew Brees. His completion percentage at about 63%. Yards per attempt, better than all on this list except for Rodgers and Wilson. And his TD numbers just down a little bit, but Pittsburgh's always tried to have some of that running game balance, that power running game. So overall, his numbers, I think those top six guys, including Wilson in that group now, for sake of the discussion, because you're limiting it to guys who've won Super Bowls, stand out ahead of those other two that we had so much debate the last couple off seasons with Flacco and Manning as to whether or not they're truly elite players. 641-1010, you want to get on board. Which offseason move by the Jags will have the biggest on-field impact in 2014? That's your Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. Coming up next, this date in football history. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I'm Lauren Brooks with your 1010XL 92.5 FM Heekin Orthopedic Local Sports Update. Florida State's Jimbo Fisher attended the 2014 ACC Media Days, and the head coach of the Seminoles continues to be impressed by his quarterback, Jameis Winston.
He understands how to prepare, but he has a true passion to play. I mean, he loves playing and competing and studying the game, not just playing the game, but studying the game and understanding the whys, and then that's what continued to just impress me over and over.
To hear all of Joe Cowart's complete interviews from Media Days, including his one-on-one with Jameis Winston, visit 1010XL.com and click the On Demand tab. Jags quarterback Blake Bortles reported to Everbank Field yesterday, along with the other rookies, but the former UCF QB could boast that he is number one. Bortles was the top-ranked quarterback in Madden 15, putting him above Johnny Football in Cleveland and Teddy Bridgewater in Minnesota. This Saturday, 1010XL and 92.5 FM will have the friendly between Fulham and DC United beginning at 6 p.m. The world's largest video boards at Everbank Field will be unveiled following the soccer game. I'm Lauren Brooks with your 1010XL 92.5 FM Heekin Orthopedic Local Sports Update. More Jaguars Today with Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony comes your way next on your home for the Jaguars, 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
There was one thing I missed while I was on vacation.
Oh, yeah?
Ladies and gentlemen, this date in football history.
Dang it, I thought it was going to be me.
It's not you, Lauren. If there
Dang
were
it.
Two things I missed while I was on vacation, this date in football history... Joe Fortunato. If there were three... Never mind.
I see where you're going.
I want to see how far that list has to go.
Top 100?
If there was one thing Lauren missed while I was gone, it wasn't me.
It was you. We all missed you.
Not me. This date in football history is presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Happy birthday, Tim Brown.
Oh!
He did eventually make the Hall of Fame, didn't he? Am I right about that in the last year or so?
Yeah, I think he did. And they clearly threw that Super Bowl.
Without question. What a weird situation. Born on this date in 1966 was Tim Brown. And also on this date in football history, Tony, in 2002, lawyers for former NFL player Ray Carruth filed an appeal on his murder conspiracy conviction. You remember how that appeal went?
Not well.
It was denied, yeah. Tony. Appeal denied.
Well, it depends on your perspective, I guess. From Ray Carruth's perspective, it went poorly. From society's perspective, it went good.
Justice system.
And he's still not in, by the way, Tim Brown.
Doing a great job. He's not in. Okay, I wasn't sure. There's a whole lot
he's
of
He's one
that.
Of those guys
is
who's
in, is he out?
Right on the edge of it every year.
That's right, and he's been on the edge, and the question was, did his comments about the Super Bowl
yep.
Hurt him? And who was it? Who's the coach who was the coach of the Nebraska Cornhuskers for a while? You know what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about, but I could maybe draw a picture of him, but I can't
you
tell
could
you
draw,
his
name. I'd like to see
Callahan,
that.
Bill Callahan.
Bill Callahan. I'd like to see you right now draw a picture of Bill Callahan.
I'm not an artist.
I don't care. Here's a pad and a pen. We will tweet this out. Remember when Pepe Wade used to draw pictures that
oh, yeah.
we would tweet out on
we
the program?
We still had the Brady one up in the studio forever.
It may still be there,
with
for
the
all
Uggs.
I know, as far as that goes. But I saw that... Aaron Hernandez's lawyers want to push his trial back to January from October. That whole, you know, right to a speedy trial thing, you have the right to that within a certain time frame. Nobody really advocates for that, it seems, for the most part. But
well, he'll appeal to get it pushed back, and then he'll say, hey, I thought I had the right to a speedy trial here.
No, you appeal to get a pushback.
That'll be the appeal after he gets found guilty of all this stuff. It'll be like, I thought I had the right to a speedy trial, and it was delayed this time and this time and this time.
Yeah, doesn't look like it's going well. That's how things work. I think it will go well for society
in the case
of the trial of Aaron Hernandez. I do think that that's not going to trend in a very positive direction. So that's what happened on this date in football history. Soon we'll be talking about, remember that time in somebody's training camp?
Yeah.
When such and such happened. Remember that great Hall of Fame game performance by whomever? Sure you will. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. They're located on Gate Parkway, so if you need cosmetic work done or you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. They're a certified Invisalign provider, and you can get a 10% discount off all first-time customer initial visits. So check them out at jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. I mentioned earlier that none of my family seemed to be aware that the NFL is going to play any games in London.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Kraft, of course, came out while I was gone and made mention that, I'm paraphrasing here, he thinks there'll be a team in London by the end of the decade. Is that the way you read his comments? I'm springing this on you. But is that the way you recall his comments from, I believe it was last week?
Yeah, basically.
By the end of the decade, he thinks it's reasonable to expect an NFL team in London. So sometime in the next 6 years.
He's been saying
years.
That for 3 years now, though.
Right. He's been the guy pushing that. The reason I bring it up is because it was maybe not surprising, but interesting to see the degree where the comments, wherever this was posted, whether it was Pro Football Talk or any of the major sites, where everybody can comment on every story now, right? Through their Facebook account, through whatever, mm-hmm. And almost, I would say, 98%, 97, 98% of the comments were totally against. And this is not just, these are national sites. So it's not just like fans of small market teams. The Jags are obviously the one, if you're going to bring them up because they're playing 4 consecutive years in London, it's not a question of Jag fans revolting against it or Buffalo Bills fans revolting against it or anything like that. It's just American football fans that think it's an absolutely stupid idea mm-hmm. to play in London. And a lot of the comments alluded to the fact that Robert Kraft could just drop new from his team and call them the England Patriots if he thought it was such a great idea. Why doesn't he head over there? And, I mean, look, Robert Kraft's looking at it from the standpoint of he's rolling in the dough up
sure.
there. But having a team or two teams in L.A. as they continue to trumpet and a team in London would ultimately make for a better bottom line for him. That's the only perspective. I can't see how it's better for the National Football League. And yes, there are arguments for and against it, and I'm not trying to get into a whole debate about that necessarily, but my main point in bringing it up is the seemingly universal distaste that the American football fan has for the idea of doing it.
Yeah, it is odd because I don't think it was that vehement even, 3-4 years ago to this idea of having an NFL team. I think that generally speaking, NFL fans didn't want to see the NFL have a team in London anyway.
And don't you think, though, 3 or 4 years ago they thought, what are we're talking about, might as well be talking about having one on the moon.
Right.
It was so far away, but now he puts an actual semi-date on the window that he thinks it'll happen.
Sure. Look, if the NFL thinks that if they put a franchise in England, which I think is a terrible idea. I have sense of the, it got mentioned a handful of years ago for the first time. I think it's a terrible idea. If you want to keep moving games through London, that makes sense. Keep the product over there. That's fine. If you want to play 3, 4, 5 games a year over in London, that makes sense to me. But bring different teams, all that kind of stuff. You can't make one team the London team. Logistically, it just doesn't make sense to me trying to figure that out, and I don't think there will be enough interest in the end for one team. If you thought, though, as the NFL, that putting a team in London would eventually lead to there being a legit professional sports league in Europe that played football at the same kind of level that the NFL does, then yeah, maybe that's worth it, but that's 50 years from now. Before that would even have a chance of being successful. The idea of putting one team in London and saying that they're going to play this same 16-game schedule that everybody else is going to play, that doesn't make any sense to me. And honestly, I think it's like trying to put a Premier League team in the USA. I don't think it works. It doesn't work. The passion for the sport in London and in England is not at the same level that it is at any of the cities that have the game now here.
I feel safe in saying that there will never be a comparable league in Europe. Ever.
Probably not. No.
Ever. Because, I mean, you look at, is there a comparable league to some of the, you know, there are a couple, I guess, premier leagues, not to use the broader term, in terms of soccer in Europe.
Sure. There's Bundesliga and Serie A and all that
stuff. Right, you can
have
MLS all you like, and it's never going to be comparable because the best players are never going to go there.
Right.
And the best players are not going to choose to go to that. And if you say, well, you've got the rest of the world to draw from, well, the rest of the world doesn't play American football nearly at the scale that America plays soccer. How many? Go look. I mean, I'm coaching for 5 years. The soccer fields are packed every Saturday morning with kids of all ages in the United States of America playing soccer. Not close to comparable anywhere in the world with American football as far as that goes.
No, and I think it makes no sense.
You'd need such a bigger pool of players to draw from. And I mean, come on, Tony. It's bad enough that you've got 32 starting quarterbacks. You can't find 32 of them really competent enough to play at a high NFL level.
Sure.
To imagine expanding beyond that. Although, I'll say this, if you want to do the LA-London thing, as much as I think the NFL is so perfectly symmetrical right now, go ahead and expand one in each. And if you want to move a second team to LA, like, say, the San Diego Chargers, that's up to you. That would be the opportunity to me. If you're ever going to expand, it's to do it in those markets simultaneously.
Sure.
Interest.
We all like the idea of growing the game of football, I think that's what the NFL in the end is trying to do. They're not only trying to help their bottom line, but trying to figure out some way to grow the game of this American style of football. It is so difficult, though, because it's not an easy game to get organized.
Do we really care if the NFL game grows any bigger, though, honestly? I mean, it's good for us in the sense that the NFL being big and having something to talk about all the time is great, but just as a football fan, do you care if it gets any bigger?
Not especially, but I think the NFL is trying to figure out some way. Look, baseball is a global game now. Basketball is a global game now. Soccer is a global game now. And here it is, the sport. It is the sport, and there's nothing even close to it here in America to football. And they can't get it anywhere else. We have the league up in Canada. They have some minor stuff that's going on in Mexico. Japan has a really terrible professional football league. But that's it. They can't get it going anywhere else. And I think they're trying to find some way to take a stake somewhere besides just right here in this brand of this sport because of how popular it is so that there can be other income streams coming in. But right now, I don't see any way to get it done.
Yeah, basketball is a global game. It's a lot easier to be a global game when you need five talented players.
Right.
And you don't need, the equipment you need basically is.
And that's why soccer is what it is.
Something round nailed up on a post on a tree and some kind of ball, makeshift ball.
Soccer, you literally need two pieces of trash and a ball. Between the two pieces of trash is a goal.
It's got to be trash.
That's literally, but I'm saying at the very base of it, that's what you need
sometimes
to be able to play
ball
that
is trash.
Game.
See, I'm not kidding. I mean, you look at, it's just, they play with old, rags taped up in the rough shape of a ball. That's what they do. And
they do.
You know, they play baseball with cardboard boxes on their hands too, so I'm told. But, it's a long cry from having, the proper equipment to play. Could you imagine what the concussion rate would be like in a lot of these countries? You've got the best, you assume the best equipment, the best technology available in the United States of America with the greatest degree of interest in providing that safety. And it's still pretty rampant, or so it seems.
Well,
here,
we saw probably 10 concussions during the World Cup.
True. Right.
I mean, it's
the violent sport of soccer.
And now you're going to ask them to play a full contact sport.
All right. We're going to talk a little San Diego Charger football with Michael Gelkin from the San Diego Union Tribune. Can that team continue to ride a late career renaissance from Philip Rivers? Is it late? I'd say it's late career.
It's pretty
for
late.
Philip Rivers getting late.
They're at the same point as Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger. He's still got a couple good years left in him. But
he looked like he was beginning to decline, though, a lot sooner than those guys.
He did.
Had a big bounce-back season last year. We'll get into the Chargers as we look at the AFC West this week. It's Jaguars Today, live from the JOI studios at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. What do we got here, Lauren? Give me a song. What do we got? What do we got?
This is Only One Way to Rock by Sammy Hagar.
All right, one. It's 1-1-1-1-1.
Uh-huh.
It's Jags are number one.
Someone on the Jags is number one.
Blake Bortles.
There we go. I even put it in my update to help y'all.
Because he's the number one rated rookie quarterback in Madden.
Exactly.
Okay.
Somebody does not like the music theme.
No, it's fine. Someone had forgotten there was a music theme. So,
and I could tell that, too.
Two for two this week.
Yes, we are. All right, coming up, Michael Gelkin, just minutes away from the San Diego Union Tribune. We'll talk San Diego Charger football. In fact, he's ready for us right now. So let's welcome him to Jaguars Today. Michael, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
We're fantastic. We were just talking about it. It seemed like last year was a bit of a career renaissance for Philip Rivers. Am I overselling that? To me, the previous year, I really questioned whether this guy was on a downward spiral in his career.
Well, the personnel around him was on a downward spiral, but I think the Chargers, with some additions, but also adjustment in scheme, really prepared Philip to have his best season in years. Completions percentage around 70%. Turnovers were way down, and he just looked comfortable in the first year of Mike McCoy and Ken Whitson's offense.
And with the weapons that you talk about, they bring in Keenan Allen in the third round, and man, did he show up for that team. But outside of Keenan Allen going into 2014, are they good enough at the wide receiver spot to continue this renaissance, as you described it, for Philip Rivers?
Yeah, there might be maybe a couple injuries away to, where do they look like? What do they look like at wide receiver? I mean, it's probably a fair question during training camp, the depth at that position. Last year, the Chargers felt really good at wide receiver, and then Dedarius Alexander tore his ACL in August, and then in September, second game of the year, Malcolm Floyd suffered a career-threatening neck injury, and he was out for the year, and that's when we saw the emergence of Keenan Allen. So right now, I think the Chargers are better at wide receiver today than they were at the end of last season, just with the return of Malcolm Floyd. They have more of a deep threat. And then also, your receiving core, so much of it, there's also the tight ends where the Chargers have Darius Green on the rise. They have the running backs for Danny Wood and Donald Brown, both can do some damage out of it, and also Matthews. So it's a kind of a group effort, but I think today is pretty good at wide receiver if the season began.
This is a team that at 9-7 surprised some people, got into the playoffs last year, was a team that was able to knock off the Denver Broncos, who finished at 13-3. What did they feel as an organization, Michael, that they needed most to address in order to close that gap with the Broncos?
Pass defense, I think, was probably a big one. The defense gave way too many big plays, especially during the first half of the year. It improved, and that's twofold. One is the play of its secondary, particularly that cornerback, where, they just, personnel-wise, it wasn't where it needed to be last year. And then the front seven, improving that pass rush. The Chargers returned Dwight Freeney, who had a torn quad tendon in October, or late September, actually. And then Melvin Ingram last year, he tore his ACL in May. You kind of appreciate the number of injuries this team went through to make its run in December to the playoffs. And just getting some of both of those guys back. Ingram returned late in the year, but he wasn't quite the same player. And then you add in the second round a draft pick, Jerry Tauchu, the all-time record leader at Georgia Tech in sacks. So he joins the mix. So the Chargers feel the front seven is better. They went to great lengths to improve at cornerback with Brandon Flowers and first-round pick Jason Barrett. So that is a key area for the Chargers. If they're to make their run and actually compete for the AFC West this year, improved pass defense has to be a big reason why.
Looking at the offensive backfield, Ryan Matthews had a pretty good season last year. Danny Woodhead provided exactly what I think the Chargers thought he would coming over there to San Diego, especially as a receiver out of the backfield for Philip Rivers. But a lot of people were scratching their head when they made the move to go get Donald Brown. What does the distribution in that backfield look like, do you think, this year?
I think it'll be similar to what we saw last year, where Ryan Matthews and Danny Woodhead are seeing together the lion's share of touches. Maybe Donald Brown is working a little more than Ronnie Brown was, but the key thing with the Donald Brown addition is that when you lose Ryan Matthews to injury, Danny Woodhead cannot do what Matthew's done. They're totally different players. When you lose Woodhead to injury, Ryan Matthews can't do what Woodhead does. There's different players. You got a guy like Donald Brown who can do a bit of both. So if Matthews goes down, Brown can do more between the tackle work. And then if Woodhead goes down, most of Donald Brown's experience comes in the passing game. So it's a good backfield. The Chargers were comfortable where their depth was. And if you look back to the game where the Chargers season was eliminated in Denver in January this year in the second round of the playoffs, Matthews only played 5 offensive snaps, and it was a windy day. Philip Rivers couldn't get the Chargers couldn't get the passing game going. They didn't have that run game guy who could just step in and pick up where Ryan Matthews left off, and that's where they feel, you know, they're closer to was Donald Brown.
And with him, with Matthews, I mean, the knock on him has been staying healthy or not staying healthy, as the case may be. Do they view him as a guy who is injury prone, or is it just a case of no two injuries are connected? He's had some bad luck, and right now he's feeling as good as he can be, and there's no reason to expect he's more likely to get hurt than anybody else.
Yeah, I think it goes both ways. I mean, first of all, a running back, you almost can't expect that your running back's going to go 16 games. And you just need to prepare yourself for that. You know, how good are you when the first guy goes down? I think that's a good way to evaluate a team's roster this time of year. How good are they if the quarterback goes down? How good are they if they lose a top wide receiver? That's how you kind of, because those things happen over the course of the year. But with Matthews, it's complex because some of it has been luck. But other parts he knows have been preventable. And like there was in the 2012 season, he bulked up way too much beforehand and broke his collarbone in his very first preseason carry, and then he broke his other collarbone later in the year to end the season. So he's gotten a lot better both this last offseason and this most recent one of just understanding what his body needs, what weight to play at, how lean he needs to be, which muscles to work on. And I think that's why we saw him play 16 regular season games last year, and that's why Ryan Matthews is confident he can build on it and get into if his team gets in the playoffs, be there for the ride.
You mentioned Ladarius Green earlier at tight end as someone who's playing alongside Antonio Gates in that offense. He came on in the last month and a half of last season. What are the expectations for Ladarius going into 2014?
They're definitely elevated. You know, this time last year and even mid-season, you know, I think, because you know, Ladarius Green is in 6'6", freaky speed tight end, and actually people in fantasy football want to know everything about Ladarius Green, and it's easy to get, I think, for people to get ahead of themselves. So this, you know, last year, I'm kind of pumping the brakes a little bit about it. This kid's still developing. He was only in his second year. Obviously talented guy, but still coming into his own. This might be the year where we change that tune, and it's still early for me to say because I want to see him in training camp. I want him to get healthy and have a preseason. Antonio Gates was not at Chargers Park at all in the spring because of a very personal family issue he's still dealing with, but he will be at camp this week. So I want to see Gates and Green on the field at the same time, which is something, a package that we're going to see a lot of this year. That being said, he has just improved so much over his first 2 years. And if you project that forward, you have to think this guy is ready to take that next step. You've got the speed and the downfield ability, downfield perceiving that this team really needs to kind of balance the Eddie Royals, you know, the Keenan Allens, and he's a kind of a different type of level guy who complements the rest of the guys around him. So I think that this could be a big year for Ladarius, but I'm not quite ready to write that in pen yet. So early in the offseason, but it's definitely a story to watch because he could be the difference maker for this offense.
Michael Gelkin here with us from the San Diego Union Tribune covering the Chargers on Jaguars Today. Michael, defensively, they drafted Matt Taito last year amid all the circumstance that went on in the offseason. How did he get along with his teammates? Were there any things, you know, going on? Did that whole situation never amount to much of anything? You know, the off-field questions he had with the fake girlfriend and all that stuff. And how is he doing as a player going into year two?
Yeah, I mean, guys knew about it, obviously. You know, it was something where, you know, especially when they first got together, you know, when my parents had first got the Chargers part, yeah, like, there was something that was on their mind. How much they actually brought it up with them and how much, you know, they joked about it. I mean, probably only the people inside the building know for sure, but I can tell you out from outside sense of a guy who's here every day, I didn't see anything. People told me that there wasn't anything on those lines. And knowing the character of this locker room, I really believe that there was minimal reference to it because it's a veteran core in terms of the guys in this locker room. They believe that any player, especially a high round draft pick, is brought here to help them, and it can bring him closer to winning a championship. And then Manti, just the guy he is, he's a hard worker, he's quiet, he'll ask questions, and, you know, he's just the guy, kind of guy that his teammate you want to see succeed and you kind of root for. So why would you impede his development to the NFL, which is a rookie is hard enough, by burying him and making him not feel part of the team? And so that was the mindset of the guys, is that they really embraced him from everything I saw and from everything they said, that Manti was just part of the team. And yeah, he had a real bad foot injury in his very first preseason game last year, and he missed about a month of practice. He missed the first couple of regular season games, but he's about as confident as a guy can be for having struggled at times last year, for having January stress fracture surgery on his foot. He really is just mentally mature guy who can handle, it seems, any adversity that comes his way. So the Chargers expect Manti to be one of their most improved players in 2014.
The Chargers were a wild card team last year. Where do you think they fit in the AFC as far as a playoff picture this year, and have they done enough to catch the Broncos in the West?
That's a big question. And, you know, I'm not one to beat the drum for the team I cover. You know, I just kind of call it the way I see it. And the roster under Tom Telesco, the general manager now in his second year, it's coming along. It really is. The depth in this team is way better, you know, 1 through 90. Than it was last year. And this 53-man roster, it's going to be tough to make. And I wouldn't be surprised if this team is making a run. I think you'd have a hard time making an argument that this team isn't better than it was last year when it did make a run. It's healthier and it's deeper, and they didn't lose anybody from last year. They re-signed all the guys they wanted to re-sign. So I think they're capable of even winning the AFC West. You know, things go wrong in Denver, you know, a few key things, and, you know, there's still so many variables in play, but I think the range of possibility for the Chargers includes an AFC West title. I think they're good enough in some key areas, are improved enough in some main spots. You know, whether it happens, I don't know. I can't really say. I can't give you a win-loss record, but this team has been assembled well enough to compete, and the coaching staff sure went pretty far last year with a lot less.
What's the window, do you think, to excel with Phillip Rivers still at the helm?
I think it's still a while. I mean, he's a guy who doesn't rely a ton on his athletic ability. If you've ever seen him out of the pocket, I don't know if his longest career run is more than 4 yards. I'm just kidding there. But yeah, I think he's, I've seen him gallop like 12. He's just, you know, he's a smart guy. He's kind of mold of a quarterback that can play for a long time in this league. He's super tough. He hasn't missed a start since he got into the league, and I'll go ahead and knock on wood right now for all the fans listening, but it's just, you know, I think he's still a ways away from hanging it up. I mean, he loves the game more than anyone probably in this building, and, you know, I think the window is still, especially the way he's playing and the scheme around him, that allows him to get the ball quick out, and he's doing more at the line. He just, if anything, he's gotten better just last year alone. I mean, that's probably in some ways his most impressive year, so I still think he's got quite a few years left in him, and the Chargers probably would do well by restructuring his contract and adding some more years to it in the next month or two.
That includes, of course, a playoff start with a torn ACL, showing how tough he was back in the day. And you're right.
Cold weather.
Yeah, not a guy known for his mobility, but certainly threw it around well last year. Final thought, Michael, we noticed this morning that a number of Chargers participated in a softball league, and they came in second in San Diego. Who the hell is playing on that championship team, man? Is that a media team out there? That's the only kind of guys I'd expect to be able to hang with professional athletes.
Yeah, no, I wasn't out there. Yeah, it was funny. I saw a story last night before I go to bed, and I was kind of kicking myself because I didn't write it. One of those things where you want to give players, because you're around them all year, the kind of space to do
right
those types of things, and then you see another publication like the Wall Street Journal doing, like, dang it, I missed one. That's
they?
Always frustrating. But yeah, it's something that they've done. You know, they played rec basketball in the past. I think they did that every year. And this year, it appears they switched to softball. There are some pictures that started leaking out about a couple of months ago. But yeah, it's just something fun that they do. I know they finished second in basketball one year, but they're just super athletic. I mean, they just get by on their athleticism. Obviously, it's crazy. But that softball championship game, I probably would have paid money to see them lose, because I imagine they can go down with a fight. I mean, if between the guys like Nick Hardwick and Phillip and Eric Weddle, I mean, those are some of the most competitive guys I've come across. So even in softball, I'm sure that comes to light.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. I don't know how understanding the organization is if you tear that knee up, breaking up that double play or turning the double play. But fortunately, it looks like they came through unscathed as far as that goes. All right, sounds to me like you think they are definitely a playoff contender, whether they live up to that or not. That's why they play the 16-game schedule. Michael Gelkin from the San Diego Union-Tribune covering the Chargers. Michael, appreciate your time. Thanks for getting up early to join us today on Jaguars Today.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, you got it, buddy. There he goes, Michael Gelkin with the San Diego Union-Tribune, Tony. I'm assuming, let's see, it's 8:30-something. Maybe he's not like me. Maybe he was up anyway at 8:30-something. You know what? Take advantage of those last few days before training camp opens up, though. Because
no doubt.
After that, it's on the march as far as that goes. Jags going into San Diego week 4 of the season, September 28th. That's a team that we'll have our close eye on early in September.
The West Coast House of Horrors for the Jags. Can they finally shake it?
Hasn't it been? I don't know. 9-7 last year, I think, winning their last 4 games. Took a lot of people by surprise. You know, we talk a lot about momentum. Does momentum carry over? In terms of the Jags, the organization has momentum. As much as we want to highlight the fact that they won 4 of their last 8 games, they lost their last 3.
They
at
did.
The same time. So you can spin momentum any way you like. We'll see. It's not going to matter when you line up across. I think Denver has done enough on the defensive side of the ball to feel pretty confident that they've got the top spot in the AFC West, barring injury, pretty much secured. Folks, I want to tell you about Foundation Professionals of Florida. They feel like you, the fans, are the foundation of the Jacksonville Jaguars. But if your home's foundation is letting you down, it's time to make that call to Foundation Pros of Florida. The engineers and specialists are your full-service foundation repair company. You need to know the symptoms, though. Interior and exterior wall cracks, windows and doors sticking, foundation cracks, sloping floors, all these could be signs that you have a much more significant problem than you realize. They offer underpinning, polyurethane, and cement grout injection. You name it. If you've got issues with your foundation, Foundation Professionals of Florida, the call you need to make at 287-2690. Visit foundationprosfl.com. That's P-R-O-S-F-L. FoundationProsFL.com. Coming back, we'll take a look at the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day, which asked which offseason move will have the biggest positive impact on the Jags in 2014. That's next on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey, this is the Wallflowers, isn't it? Right here? Huh? Tony?
You're so obnoxious.
What's the song called? One headlight? Something like that? One taillight? I don't know. One of those.
Do you know the front man?
The front man is Joe. I have no idea.
Tony?
It's Bob Dylan's kid, but I can't remember his first name.
Jacob.
Austin.
Yeah. And Jacob, by the way, is the same name as John Osher's son, whose birthday is today. So happy birthday, little Ozone.
It's funny you said it. I actually saw like a Saturday Night Live replay on VH1 while I was on vacation. And Jacob Dylan was the musical guest. So there you have
He's the front man for the Wallflowers.
Tying it all in together now.
There you go. Good job knowing the song.
One being, yes, well, I'm right off the top of my head. I had that one after a note or two without any help.
Impressive.
Thank you very much. One is in honor of Blake Bortles' number one ranking among rookie quarterbacks in Madden.
Take that, rookies.
So there. We will slay you on the
EA likes the Jaguars pick.
That's right. When we play the Madden Championship on the big screens here at Everbank, that would be sweet, though, wouldn't
that
it?
That would be cool.
Seriously. Is that a thing?
I don't know about the Madden Championship. They should do every championship on those screens. No, seriously.
True.
Can you imagine playing any video game on those giant screens? Be phenomenal.
Man, opening up national championships going on. Just open up the stadium.
Got to fill
watch.
That stadium up on other days,
right.
too, right? All right. So speaking of the stadium and the ones who inhabit it, those would be the Jacksonville Jaguars. Those are the ones we care about the most. Anyway, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight asking you today which offseason move will have the biggest impact on the Jags in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to eliminate the idea of Blake Bortles being transformative for the franchise.
Sure.
But you could still think, hey, it's up to
they
you.
They drafted him number 3 overall.
He may get in there and start X amount of games, even though pretty clear, most recent comments by Gus Bradley, I believe, in the interview with Ryan O'Halloran that he did. And by the way, Gus tomorrow on Jaguars Today will join us in the 10 o'clock hour. So be listening for that, as we hope you're listening every day for anything. Good to hear Hacker yawning in my ear right there. Apparently we're not entertaining him back in the 1010XL studios. Very well right now.
Now so, we are, though.
Now we are, yeah. Now we are. So that was good to hear. Gus saying basically, like, Blake Bortles, if he starts a preseason game, it's going to be the fourth preseason game.
Yeah.
Which you kind of expect to at that point, provided that you don't need – you hope to goodness you're not in a situation where the Jags feel they have to – feel good about the offense in week four of the preseason. And
yeah.
Let's throw the starters out there for a half.
We've seen that story.
We've
play
been
out
down
before.
That road before, Tony.
Yeah, you don't want to be in that spot.
So Chad Henne, obviously, entrenched as the starter to open the season and going into training camp and all that stuff. So, some of the feedback we got today via Twitter is what?
Yes, I only am going to read the ones that obviously include the Jaguars Today hashtag. And since we were asking for one move, anyone who included more than one player or a position group or anything like that, I'm not reading those either because we were asking for one move.
One single move, right?
Yes. So we appreciate all the responses.
We do.
We're trying to give away a t-shirt. That's right. From Issachar, we got Clemens. Better quarterback rush makes everything easier for everyone on defense. Hashtag Jaguars Today. From Chris, we got to be Toby Gerhart. Do-it-alls have impact beyond 14 QB, always wins with Blake Bortles, but for this year at least, Toby Gerhart, hashtag Jaguars Today. From Jimmy, Toby Gerhart, with all that is being said by the coaches, and there are plans for him, no doubt. Hashtag Jaguars Today was the use of there that kind of threw me off a little bit. From, it was the wrong there that they used.
It was the wrong there. There's no there there.
Yeah.
Who said that?
It was there. It was like
that's a quote, Fortunato.
They used the word there like as in a place, and it should have been as in
right.
a person, and it threw me off a little bit. My brain couldn't comprehend it. From Jay Portals, we got trading Gabbert. We never have to watch him on the field again. We already won in 2014. Hashtag Jaguars Today. And one more here from Paolo. We got, don't know about on-field, but the debut of Jaguars Today makes the most off-field dividends for the Jags in 2014. Hashtag Jaguars Today. Thank you, Paolo.
Gertrude Stein, by the way, said there's no there. Where was she referring to, Fortune? I need a reference point for there's no there. Tony, you must have done some serious scolding while I was away.
No.
Because everyone on Facebook is using the hashtag Jaguars Today.
We
as well.
Have we've gone above and beyond on encouraging the pandering too. So
I'll have you.
Yeah.
The pandering is strong.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, the pandering is strong. Though for the ones the multiples who said Jaguars Today is the best off-season move, they'll have the most positive impact. We appreciate, although probably don't agree with the sentiment. Gosh, I hope not. Thomas Gilmore said solidifying the front seven on defense is what will keep the Jags in games. Agree with Tony, that's not one move, but I'm not as picky as he is today. That's hashtag Jaguars Today. Nicholas Wall said Zane Beatles help mentor our young offensive line, and you can assume all these are hashtag Jaguars Today. Drew Kopp said hands down Toby Gerhart. Anthony Amp Jones, those big old jumbotrons, obviously much of the current buzz and relevance now is centered around them. We were just discussing them as well. And here's one for the pools, Tony, from Douglas Pelsey. He says, I know it says on-field, but hear me out. The pools equal more fans in the stadium, which equals a louder crowd, which equals the 12th man in Jacksonville, which equals home field advantage, hashtag Jaguars Today, hashtag splash jag, hashtag we have depth in more than one way, he says with the witty pun. By the way, did you see the CNN announcer who threw in the line about, what was he, discussing the Malaysian plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
He said that theory had been shot down or something like that. And I don't know if he was meaning to say, I don't think it was an intentional thing, but then he described it. He said, excuse the pun, which made it seem like it was intentional. File that under the category of probably too soon.
Yeah, it's a poor taste.
On that one.
Too soon.
If you're going to be on CNN pushing that agenda out there. All right. So for me, it's Toby Gerhart, Tony. I mean, look, the one guy that every week offensively should have the ball in his hands 18 to 20 times. You know, I actually like the person who suggested just the fact that Chad Henne is back with the same system in consecutive years, and that'll help him get off to a good start. But to me, that's why I debate you. Like, you got Zane Beatles. All right, if he goes down, I'll find a guy to plug in at guard and hopefully get me along. They're counting on Gerhardt to be, I think, among the better backs in the National Football League this year. They think he's got that kind of potential. We've seen it before with a guy like Michael Turner, who toiled behind LaDainian Tomlinson in San Diego, finally got a chance to show what he could do in Atlanta, and for a few years was really among the better running backs in the National Football League. And I think that's their feeling, is what Gerhardt can be to their offense this year.
I was debating between two guys, and it's Toby Gerhardt and Chad Henne, because, look, it's the quarterback. He's going to be the starting quarterback at least to start the year for them. And signing Chad Henne gives them the flexibility to do with Blake Bortles what they're doing. It made them feel comfortable taking a quarterback at number three overall in the draft and saying, look, we're not going to play him until we're ready to play him, because they have Chad Henne over here who knows the offense, who knows the team, who knows the personnel, and is very comfortable with everything he's going to be asked to do. But in the end, I don't think Chad Henne is as good a football player as Toby Gerhardt, so I think the impact of Gerhardt's going to be bigger, especially on a team that wants to run the ball as much as the Jaguars seem to want to be able to run the ball this year. So for me, as far as on-field impact for the Jags in 2014, the move they made that will have the biggest on-field dividends is going to be Toby.
Yeah, and Chris Clements, I think, is a solid submission. Look, they're all, if you made a good point on backing up your point.
They brought in a lot of guys that they're going to be relying on from day one. That's what the Jags had to do this offseason because the roster has been that bad.
Put it this way, I hope Chris Clements is to the defense what Toby Gerhardt is to the offense, but they have so many guys. You feel like they're actually one of the better units on paper is that defensive front four, and you hope that if it's not, like you said, just Clemens every week, it's the Leo position as a whole, plus contributions from the interior of the defensive line, getting some push.
Yep.
Get some push, create double teams, and make single blocks available for guys to beat all game long. Joe Fortune, do we have an update on No There There?
Oakland, California.
Indeed, Oakland, California, Gertrude Stein's birthplace, apparently. And on revisiting it later in her life, she remarked that there's no there there. My sister, I took the tour of Milford, Connecticut last summer where I grew up.
Yeah.
So she went with me to the family reunion, my wife, my son, her husband, the whole thing. So we're all up there, and she wanted to go over there, so I tried to explain to her. It was much like there's no there there. There's no yard there. She's like, wasn't this the giant backyard? What happened to it? We were like this tall. That's what happened to it. Proportion happened to it. We apparently grew up, Tony, in a house that's about 20 square feet, because it's a tiny little one on Girard Street in Milford. But it was good to be back in the old stomping grounds. Better to be back with you today on Jaguars Today. So thanks to all of our great sponsors, for Fat Tony, for Joe Fortunato, for Lauren Brooks. Good to be back with you. I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll be live out at training camp coming up this week. Don't forget 1010XL. We'll have the Fulham game broadcast live this weekend. So everything that's happening Jaguar-related, you're going to catch it right here on the flagship station for your Jacksonville Jaguars. 1010XL, 92.5 FM. The boys from XL Primetime coming up next right here.